podcast. I'm trying not to do my radio presenter's voice today, and I think I'm failing. But well, anyway, welcome back to the podcast. And this is episode number 42 now. And I hope you're doing well today. This podcast is all about being an extraordinary coach. We're going to be talking with lots of interesting people, and I've been having some amazing conversations this week about coaching and everything that fits into this broad field. So today we're going to be talking about purpose. It's kind of a hot topic, and we're going to be talking about what I call deep purpose. This is a session from the coaching summit that we had earlier this year with Jonathan Gustin. So we're going to be talking about the kind of purpose where, you know, once you've gotten the career and the house and the money and all those things that you wanted, and then it's like, oh my God, there's still something missing. What's going on? And we're going to be talking about the kind of purpose today that when we start to live it, that feeling that something is missing goes away. We feel like we're doing what we were put on this earth to be doing. So, as I mentioned, I'll be talking with Jonathan Gustin. He's a cool guy. I've been learning a lot from him this year. And he's a purpose guide, a psychotherapist, a meditation teacher. He is the founder and lead teacher at the Purpose Guide Institute. And he's doing cool things like teaching purpose discovery at the San Quentin Prison in California. So if you like this podcast, please share it. Please subscribe if you're just tuning in from some random place. And what else? Yeah, leave a review. Yeah, so let's dive in. Hope you enjoy it. Before we get into today's podcast, I have an invitation for you. We're about to kick off the 9th edition of our longest running program, The Power of Embodied Transformation. This is a program I'm really proud about because it shows you how to tap into the intelligence of change itself. One of the most profound discoveries of neuroscience is that intelligence isn't just in the domain of the mind. In fact, so much of the deep wisdom we need in order to evoke transformation actually lives in the body. And yet, so many of the people you'll encounter in your coaching have actually been trained away from accessing the wisdom of the body. So this program will reconnect you to this embodied intelligence so you can create deep, lasting change with your clients. We're honored to have a truly world-class faculty for this program. You'll learn from the founder of Somatic Coaching, Richard Strozzi-Heckler, alongside contemporary coaches who've integrated this powerful approach with new discoveries in neuroscience, trauma work, and leadership development. It's going to be an amazing transformational journey, so I hope you'll come and join us. You can head to coachesrising.com/power of embodied transformation to book your spot. The first class is on the 6th of June with Richard, and if you sign up by May the 22nd, you can get the early bird discount. So just head to coachesrising.com/power of embodied transformation to book your spot. Jonathan, so great to see you. How are you doing right now?
I'm doing great. Yeah, had a good morning. Got a nice meditation in. So I'm ready to dig into this topic with you.
Well, I am too. I mean, it's one of the topics that it's just lighting me up at the moment. And we're going to explore this topic of purpose today. And I know you've got a lot to say about that. So let's begin at the beginning and just start with the, you know, a simple, but I think a big question, which is like, what is purpose to you?
Yeah. Well, that's the basic question, isn't it? The kind of the simple way into it is that there's a triple purpose of life: to wake up, grow up, and show up. To wake up to classical enlightenment, to grow up into what I call an emotional adult, and to show up with our gift, our service, our vocation as an offering to life. So that's sort of the short kind of pithy way of saying it: wake up, grow up, show up. And I have sort of, you know, baskets of interests and baskets of sort of my professional identity. And what I've noticed as a psychotherapist, a meditation teacher, and as a purpose guide, that the purpose piece doesn't really get as much play. So in psychotherapy, which has become mainstream, the purpose there, you could say, is to bring what is unconscious and bring it into consciousness, take what's in the shadow and bring it into light so that we become an emotional adult capable of giving and receiving love without unnecessary impediment, capable of unbounded joy, just joy that's like off the leash, untethered joy. And the ability to actually be equanimous in the face of all of life's, vicissitudes. So that's one purpose, right? Just to be a grown-up. And I'm still working on it, right? So I've been married for 21 years. And, the day my wife puts a gold medal around my neck, I'll know I've made it. So it's an ongoing process of transformation. So that's one purpose, just to be a grown-up in the world. And then there are the two overtly spiritual dimensions. And those are the ones that I'm especially interested in. And so there's the classical or traditional enlightenment, this transcendence, this softening or dissolving of the separate self sense. And this is often associated with like the enlightenment of the Buddha or sages from any really time or culture. And what is experienced there, if you're to believe the perennial philosophy, is unitive intimacy, oneness, non-duality. And that's a whole topic in itself. But there's another piece. And meditation, of course, has also become, a mainstream, which is wonderful. But purpose isn't really talked about so much in that lineage. I'm an old Zen guy, and I love Zen, and I love psychotherapy, but purpose doesn't really get a ton of play. Some, but not much. So there's this other dimension. Instead of pure spirit or pure transcendence or the mystery that animates and permeates everything, and instead of just a mature self, there's this in-between world of soul. I won't define soul unless you press me, because you can't really say what it is, but that doesn't stop me from trying. But basically, there's this whole dimension of a human being, and we can experience it. It's a spiritual dimension where we descend, we burrow into our depths, and we discover what is uniquely ours at the level of soul, at the level of what is our unique transformational proposition. What is the thing that we are meant to do? And it's different than the uniqueness of the personality. At the level of personality, I'm liberal as opposed to conservative. I like skiing and jazz as opposed to snowboarding and country and Western music, right? But at the level of soul, there is something that is uniquely mine. It's sometimes called the mythopoetic image. It's like, what is the image at the center of your being, as the poet David White put it? What is the image at the center of your being that you are meant to be faithful to? And when you know what that image is, you can allow it to occupy your life. And I believe that's what we see in some of our golden shadow projections, when we see someone like, Nelson Mandela or Martin Luther King Jr. or Gandhi. We see people who are animated by a mythic story or narrative or image. And then they do great work. You can feel the power in that.
Beautiful. Certainly that's been true for me, of doing therapeutic work and then doing tons of spiritual work and bearing fruits from that. And yet still feeling like, there's just something that's it's not touching a certain spot. There's something missing, and I think, as I am starting to learn more about soul, it's that thing, that was missing, that reason that I'm here. So, I imagine you would agree with this, but I feel like there's a deficiency of soul in the world right now.
Yeah. Well put. Yeah. It's in my opinion, we live in a soul impoverished world. So because psychotherapy has become more and more online, the idea of becoming kind of an integrated, full functioning ego or self or personality is a desirable thing, right? We want to be mature and be able to give and receive love and so forth. And even the idea of transcendence, right? Getting off the wheel, getting, feeling the liberation of absolute non-separation from all of life. But neither of those two really get to the question, why am I here? And then most importantly, what do I do, right? The poet Mary Oliver put it like this, you know, what do I do with this one wild, precious life? Right. So I want to fill up the fun bucket. I want to have fun every day because I like to be happy. But there's a deeper current, right? So, you know, I exist on the surface, I exist in the middle of the pool, but at the deep end of my existence, of my wholeness, where am I meant to be? What am I meant to do? Where do I swim? What are the fish that I swim with? What do we eat? What do we do? How do we contribute to the whole ecosphere, you know, in the depths of the ocean? And I don't think it's something the mind can actually produce. I don't think it's something the mind can easily deduce. In fact, we want to turn to different capacities, an organ of perception, as Corban puts it, of imagination. And that gets really exciting to actually have a sense of, oh, I have the perfume of what I am meant to do and be in this world, the place I'm meant to stand in myself and in the culture. I have a sense of it. I have I'm able to, well, to stand in it. I think the word place is really important. Do we know where we belong and what our relationship is in the world?
I'd love to ask you about you mentioned, like, it's not something we necessarily work out with our minds, you know, and there's a different way of perceiving it, of like this, yeah, perception that we can start to maybe attune to or uncover purpose. So, and you know, I think a lot of people listening are coaches and people working with different people in the world who are interested in how do I become purposeful, lead a purposeful life, you know, especially leaders, and how does that influence my leadership? So perhaps you could, I think, I know I've heard you talk about the different types of purpose that we can, maybe it's a good time to bring those in, and we can then explore, yeah, what is this mode of perception or ways that we can uncover what our purpose is?
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's sort of three broad baskets of purpose. We could call one sort of the default purpose, and this is often inherited. And it's not necessarily unwholesome or unworthy, but it's given to us. We absorb it. And if we're not careful, we won't question it. We won't see if it's authentically ours, right? So, you know, I was raised in a liberal household. I became sort of a liberal person. But then the question is that indigenous to me, or am I just taking on what, you know, was given? And so I think it's the same thing with our purpose. So, you know, one purpose in life is simply to be what? Successful, beloved, happy, rich, famous, and so forth. So if you just look at the thing with money, you know, most of us, including myself, would prefer to have more than less. I certainly don't wish to be impoverished. And we can take that continually. You can become a billionaire and still desire to go to the next stage of 10 billion. And as I said, an inherited purpose can be wholesome and beautiful, and it can end up being what ours really is. So I think of Martin Luther King Jr., whose father, you know, Martin Luther King Sr., was also a minister and an activist. So it's not necessarily true that it's not indigenous or unwholesome. But more often than not, it can, if we don't lean into it and question it, then it really is a default purpose. We're operating on something that's given to us without really questioning it and seeing if it's true for us. So an upgrade from that is created purpose. So purpose 2.0. A creative purpose is we come to realize that the canvas for creating meaning in our lives is just incredibly broad. It's really one of the like astounding things. In fact, many of us will shrink back from it because it's scary when you realize you don't actually have to be what your parents told you, you're liberal Christian, wanting to be successful and a doctor, I don't know, you know, and have 2.4 kids. When you realize that that's fine as far as it goes, but that you have never really asked yourself what you want, it can be existentially intimidating. You really, the canvas is gigantic. And you can create a purpose. You can ask yourself sort of in the head, if you will, you know, what is a life that's worth living? Philosophers really dig into this quite a bit. And through that, you can construct or create meaning in your life. And this is beautiful. Your creativity comes online. Some of your passion comes online. Some of your uniqueness comes online. So this is nice. You're going from socially authored to self authored, which is a beautiful thing. But that's still not soul authored. Still not soul authored. The third possibility, what I'd call purpose 3.0. is discovering something that is you were born to. And this is where I get just overtly spiritual. So, you know, be forewarned. The cosmology that I resonate with is a cosmology of soul. And by that, I mean that we are born to occupy a particular niche, if you say it that way, in the ecology of life. And Bill Plotkin puts this really, really well. And, you know, it's not really a choice about what we become. Yeah. So like I didn't, when it came to my sexual orientation, I didn't look at the different choices. I could be gay, I could be straight, I could be bi. I mean, I knew those were some of the broad choices. But what happened is I discovered my orientation. I was interested in girls. And so that's a discovery. It wasn't a like, here's three things on the menu and I will choose from it. And so, you know, a sunflower doesn't get to choose whether it's a deer, and a deer doesn't get to choose whether it's a maple tree. We there's a certain sense of destiny and unfolding. And there's this beautiful word, it's an old Greek word from Aristotle, and entelechy. And James Hillman uses this in his acorn to oak metaphor. And the destiny of an acorn is not to become a maple, it's to become an oak, right? And so the destiny of Jonathan is to become something very unique, never seen before. And as much as my golden shadow projections of Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr., I'd just never be them. It's just not going to happen. There's a picture of Ramana Maharshi, an Indian sage who I admire very much. And I just will never, I'm not going to be a Maha sage. It's just probably not going to happen. And so then the question is, well, what wants to be grown? What wants to be expressed and bloomed here in this one? And the same thing with you. Like if Joel was left unfettered for 1,000 years to just develop and blossom completely as himself, God, that excites me. I just would love to see what he grows into. And even if you only live, 80 or 90 years. And so this is a soul discovery. It's not so much about choice. We discover that image or that metaphor of what we are meant to be, and we are faithful to it. We allow ourselves to grow into that which we were meant to be. It's an evolutionary impulse, right? We see it in the acorn growing into the oak, same thing with a baby deer, same thing with a particular human, right? And And Beethoven wasn't going to become Gandhi, and Gandhi wasn't going to be Beethoven. They have their unique genius. There's a beautiful book, The Genius Myth by Michael Mead. And not genius like, you know, 200 IQ, which is great if you're born with one. I mean, like the genius that each person has, their sort of unique powers, soul core powers. So those are three baskets of purpose. The default or inherited purpose, the created purpose, and sometimes people will swing, especially, you know, teenagers and young people, but even later, will swing from the inherited purpose and will sort of rebel against it and try out its opposite, which is not a bad thing to do. But then you're still actually reacting to the socially created purpose to some degree. Yeah. So you're like, if it's excessive about money, now suddenly you're like, I don't care. You know, I'm just going to be a homeless vagabond, which if it's authentic to you, great. But if it's not, then you've just reacted. But this third choice is a deep dive into soul through soul encounter, through encountering images of your entelechy, your fullness, and then living into them, integrating them and embodying them in life.
A beautiful answer. I mean, brings up so many questions for me. I imagine that a lot of people get to this discerned purpose, you know, created purpose, self-authored purpose, and that's enough for them. But there are perhaps some, and I put myself in this bracket, that still felt, you know, that's not it. You know, it's not the end game. There's still something missing, you know? And so, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, so it's not better or worse, right, to have one rather than the other. There is a hierarchy, a growth hierarchy, as Ken Wilber would say. But that doesn't make, you know, I have a 9-year-old, I'm 51, and I'm not better because I'm more developed or anything like that. So if inherited purpose is really bringing someone alive and they feel like they're doing good in the world, fine. I'm not a missionary or an evangelist for the soul's purpose. And then if your created purpose is feeling like really meaningful to you, it's filling you up, then great. But for some of us, we're like, I want the absolute, like the deepest wine, the aged wine, the deep end of the pool. We don't want to just sit on the little stairs or just have our feet touching the bottom of the pool. We want to be deep sea divers. We want to know how far do my depths go? Because not only like what I like to get to know you just seem like a very interesting and deep person. I would like to get to know my wife, my son, and I'd like to get to know myself. And there's no end. I mean, my son's, you know, just 10 years or nine, almost 10 years now. And, you know, I'm just sort of like, wow, there's so much to him. I've been married for 21 years and she, you know, I mean, I'm just beginning to get to know her. There's so much. She's mostly unknown to me, even though, you know, I know her, relatively speaking, very well. And the same with myself. A human being is just mostly unused potential, is mostly unknown territory. We're living, I think, perhaps in a little postage stamp swath of the territory of our being. And I think it's probably because we're, you know, this is speculation, but we're a relatively young species. You know, modern Homo sapiens about 40,000 years, Homo sapiens about 200,000. Well, that's actually really fresh, you know, and so it's understandable that we haven't really learned yet to make use of everything that we have. You know, Albert Einstein was made this speculation. I don't know how he got it. He said, I suspect I've used only 5% of my brain. Well, if he only used 5% of his brain, I'm currently using less than 1% of my brain, which makes me wonder, you know, just at the level of hardware, you know, what's possible to use, you know, in this synaptic web. And then at a spiritual level, you know, how much of me is untapped? There's a quote I like. I can't remember who said it. For something to be real here, it has to also be real elsewhere, which is to say, for something to exist, more of its reality has to be somewhere else. And I used this metaphor the other day in a class. I was walking, just taking a hike. And so I was kind of sort of like a half meditation, half just hike. And I imagined that this body was like a probe, like being, you know, an ocean probe, right? But on the surface is a ship, and the ship has much more of the probe in it. It's got a whole room with scientists and controllers and audio technicians and all of that. So the probe may be just like the size of, like a size of a human, let's say, a small submersible. But most of the probe and its sort of deep intelligence is actually floating on the ship. And so I imagined that that's what was happening here. And that what was walking through the forest was a probe, a three-dimensional probe being sent from a four-dimensional space, imaginal realm, if you will. I like to call it the Imagine-a-Matrix. Mm. And I'll be damned. I felt just this sort of expansion. I felt actually a limiting of choice, but it felt great. I just was like, let something of greater intelligence take control of me. Now, I wouldn't want something of less intelligence or malevolent, but what I kind of got was that if I kind of ego got out of the way, more of this character, more of its unique, really its authenticity, its indigenosity could come to the foreground. I felt connected to that fourth dimension.
Right. I mean, you brought in a big idea here. So I want to make sure, you know, like this idea of this Imagine-a-Matrix, you know, some people might be like, okay, what's this? You know, so I want to make sure we don't skip over that. And yet what I want to add is like, I just see more and more people around me who are, you know, like they're just getting to the limits of the kind of, the ego that's in control, and you know, no bad thing to that, but they just feel like, you know, this is just wanting to control and manage my life, and I see so many people interested in this idea of surrender, and what if I just like let go, you know, Michael Singer's work, you know, is hugely popular around the world. What if I just let go and let something come through me and move me, and I think that's, you know, as I am playing with that and rather badly at times, you know, it's lo and behold, you know, it does feel like something comes through and it's incredibly meaningful and fulfilling and creative and spontaneous and alive and all those kinds of words. So I wanted to add that and then come back to, you know, this idea of like, what's this Imagine-a-Matrix and the imaginal, because I think it ties in with a question that we need to go into more, which is like, okay, uncovered purpose and soul. So what's that realm like? What's purpose discovery like in the realm of, you know, soul?
Yeah. Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, I really liked what you said there. Gosh, where to come into that? I agree with you that the ego, even one that's functioning fairly well, isn't necessarily the most creative force in the world. If I just look at my thinking, I notice my thinking tends to be quite repetitive. It tends to be of a somewhat low grade often. You know, I'm massaging grievances, you know, often against, you know, my stepmother, and it just kind of cycles over and over. And I've been doing this for a while, you know, and so, you know, the ego has its place, right? So, you know, if you use Maslow's hierarchy, that pyramid, it's safety, security. I want to feel like I belong just at a regular sort of social level. I want my esteem needs to be met. I want to feel like I can feel decent about myself, and hopefully that others, you know, at least some people like me and appreciate me. So these are all legit. These are all legit, but they're not the deep end of the pool. And so then we come to the tip of this pyramid, self-actualization. Well, how does that happen? Where do we go to actualize this depth dimension of ourselves? Well, to me, having a cosmology is important. A cosmology, the one that I'll sort of lean into here, the Imagine a Matrix, it's not true, right? It's like good poetry. It has a perfume of something that you can feel is psychoactive. It brings us alive. But it's not a scientific fact. When I have these mystical experiences, it's difficult to discern. Am I experiencing something that is an actual, tangible reality? Is it happening just inside my psyche, archetypal figures? Is it something in between? So I would describe it like this, that there's a whole realm, a whole world that we tend to ignore in modern and postmodern society. And what we tend to give attention to is a tangible material reality and the discursive, you know, thinking cognitive mind, which can, you know, test and reach out with its instruments and its perception. And this is considered the real. And, you know, science is wonderful. I love it. But there's a whole realm, an organ of perception, if you will, of imagination, deep imagination. It's different than fantasy, at least the way I use the word. I can fantasize about winning the lottery and getting a Tesla. And I'm like, okay, I imagine buying a ticket, winning, and then buying a fast electric car. Okay, that's ego. Nothing wrong with that. I'm sure I enjoy a fast electric car. Imagination is different. Deep imagination is a capacity of soul. It's really synonymous with soul. And we can actually allow ourselves to drop into it. I'll describe Soul Encounter in a moment, the technologies. We can allow ourselves to drop into it and be taken by it. As you were saying, what was the word? Surrender into this other organ. It's as if we have an invisible third arm here. And because we don't, I pretend I don't see it. You pretend you don't see it. We don't talk about it. And so we keep ourselves, you know, rather limited. So we'll operate mostly ego to ego. Oh, you're a smart person. I mean, I can tell you're a highly intelligent person. Hopefully you'll think I am. And we'll operate like that. We'll go back and forth with our intellects and probably have some fun. But what if I see you as an extension of the imaginal realm, the imagine a matrix itself, that you're just like, what I see here is Joel is like the tip of the iceberg, and underneath the water in the deep end of the ocean is this immense Joel. And more in my relationship, I interact with you presupposing that that is the case, perhaps even seeing some of it. And you see it in me. And now we're acting not just as the little, you know, human avatar, we're acting more and more as the player behind the game. So this could be another metaphor that what we really are is soul playing a virtual reality video game in the Imagine a Matrix. And we have this avatar, right? The Joel avatar, the Jonathan avatar. We get to play around. Around goes maybe 80 years if we take care of the avatar. You can play another round, but you can't reanimate the avatar. But you can maybe take some of the wisdom from a previous existence. And the game, which I would name Acorn, you know, Planet Earth, Acorn to Oak. That's the name of the game. And it's better than any of these video games they have now. This is an adventure game where you're meant to wake up, occupy your deep place, inhabit your purpose, give away with abandon your gifts, and then that round of the game ends. And it's a multiplayer game. There's about 7.5 billion people playing it now. And the meta game is we can evolve the species or we can devolve it. And it's anyone's guess which way we're going right now. And so if you imagine that you're like a three-dimensional painting coming from a four-dimensional universe, that you're an avatar, a character, but you are being played by yourself at that depth dimension from another realm. So that's the Imagine a Matrix, a whole world of spiritual, soulful imagination.
Just a little comment on that, because I know you're going to talk about the technologies and stuff, but you know, I'm in the training with you, this purpose guide training, and loving it. And wow, like what you just shared is like showing up in the sessions. It's like there's this sense of both of us being taken in the coaching, in the guiding session. And it's incredible, you know, something comes through, and I'm coaching, or I say coaching because that's what I do mostly, but it, you know, I'm like in this session with them, and I find myself speaking and saying things that I didn't know I was going to say. And what's even more interesting is what it evokes inside of them. You know, like something comes alive inside of them, and they're in tears, they're awestruck, shaken, and you know, it's very palpable and tangible. And so what you speak of here, I wanted to kind of bring in something because it's very practical too. This is how it's showing up for me in the work.
Oh, that's so beautiful. That, you know, you're, so, you know, Maya, and correct me any time here, because I'm not a coach, I'm a purpose guide, which is a bit different. A coach is wonderful because that can bring someone into their created purpose, which is a beautiful thing. But a coach who has some experience, a specialty, if you will, in this soul guiding, one of their main jobs is to get out of the way, right? So there's regular everyday me, which is just an average person doing average things. But when I show up in the role of guide, Jonathan's not really that relevant, frankly. You know, nothing against him, right? And so I attempt to make myself available to this imaginal realm and allow it to do the work. When I do the work, it's meh, it's so-so. Same thing as a psychotherapist, same thing as a meditation teacher. Because of my experience and learning, I can fake it adequately. But the best sessions are when I have no idea what's going to be said. And I'm used. It feels like a Jonathan puppet, like something deeper and wiser kind of puts its hand in my back and animates me. And I'm sitting here listening, learning as much as, you know, the person I'm so-called guiding. And it's an amazing thing, because when we're, it influences, it affects the person we're working with. Like if you have two bells, you can ring one bell and the other bell will start to vibrate sympathetically. When I hang out with my teacher, Ajashanti, he's a pretty awake guy, a very awake guy in my estimation. Hang out with him long enough and something begins to change in me, because he's embodying this, what I would call this upper world awakening. And just the presence of someone who is seated in the imaginal, seated in soul itself, is a real gift. So this is why I, you know, go to his meditation retreats as often as possible and hang out with him as much as I can. We want an intelligence to a bigger intelligence than this can provide. And it's At first, it could be a little existentially terrifying or not, but for some people, it's like, oh my God, I have no idea what I'm going to do or say. And then eventually it becomes, that's the sweet spot. If you think you know what you're going to say and you have your kind of rehearsed spiel or whatever, then again, it's just eh. But someone will ask a question or something will come up and my head will go, God, I have no idea. You know, my head will go, wow, that's above my pay grade, you know, and then I'll just rest. And of course, if nothing comes up, I'll just say, yeah, I don't know. Let's just wait. Let's see what comes up between us. No reason to rush. But often something fresh and creative and a mysterious response. And then we're like playing ping pong at the bottom of the ocean. You know, this ball comes across and I have no idea how to hit it, but the arm just naturally goes. And then we're playing together. We're become co-explorers of the client's truth at a very deep level. And the teacher begins to dissolve, the student begins to dissolve, and we are just expressions of the imaginative matrix supporting one another.
I want to ask a kind of paradoxical question here. And because, you know, the question is, so how do we start to do that? You know, and of course, you know, there's a contradiction in the question, because if I try to do that, then it doesn't work, you know? So I guess like my question is, how can we start to access that realm? And, you know, I get the overall idea is surrender or let go, but I guess I'm also like weaving into that, like, how do we access our purpose through this imaginal too? You know, like how do we hone in on that?
Yeah. Great question. In the synthesis that I've created, I call it the purpose discovery process. I would say there's sort of like two wings of the bird, right? The whole animal that does this, you know, this journey. And one is resistance and the other is soul encounter. And the image I like to use quite often is that of an arrow, evolution's arrow. And on the one hand, we have homeostasis, right? Keeping us like grounded and consistent. And this is good. This is understandable. Our homeostatic mechanism for temperature keeps us safe, right? What is it? 98.7, I think. And if you're a degree up or two, you know, that's not good. You're running a fever and a degree or two the other direction, you risk hypothermia. So homeostasis is a good thing, mostly. But when it comes to our evolution, it's like the drag, right? So if the tip of the arrow, which we like to spend a lot of time with, right? Because it's the sort of sexy tip of our evolutionary leading edge, the soul encounter. If we don't pay attention to the feathers in the back, if we just leave them untrimmed and all messy and just try to ignore them, we'll be a very poor arrow maker. The arrow will not hit its mark. So it's resistance to embodying our soul's purpose isn't stuff that gets in the way of the work. It's the work itself. So I can say from part of me, I want to be fully soul awakened. That's authentic. But there's an and. And there's a part of me that doesn't. Why? Well, I don't know what would happen. What if I had this just endlessly, you know, I think it just keeps going and going. Like soul awakening isn't like just a moment and then it ends. It's just like classical enlightenment. It would seem it just keeps going. So why would I risk what I have? I feel pretty good in my soul's purpose. If I were to go the next step, go out into the desert and do a vision quest, which I do from time to time, then I'm putting at risk the homeostasis of my current life. What if I come back and I discover I don't want to be a purpose guide anymore? I've spent all this time creating Purpose Guides Institute, 17 years. And so I kind of feel like, what if that's What if it turns out I'm supposed to do something different? What if it turns out this woman that I love for 21 years, my wife, that I'm supposed to part company, right? What if my new understanding of my purpose brings with it some disapprobation from, you know, my community? I'm supposed to go into da 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 da, and they're all like, kind of like thinking I'm crazy, and they're not liking it, and I get criticism. So this is all the normal things of the ego, right? Like I have a sort of stable life here in my little town of Fairfax and things are going well. And in order to evolve to the next stage, Jonathan 4.0, there's that risk. Will I be able to earn money? Will I be safe? Will I be loved? All of these things. These are all the things that people who come to see me to take this purpose discovery program, there's almost always this big question. What's the risk? Because on the surface of it, it sounds really delicious, inhabiting the deep end of the pool of yourself. But in reality, there are elements, let's call it the protector voices, if you will, that say, whoa, whoa, whoa. you know, will I have to leave my corporate job? Will I have to, you know, da 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 da? Will I have to let go of friends who aren't on that path? And there's no have to generally, but as we move into the deep end of the pool, we may find that naturally some of our community begins to fall away. The more that I go deeply into this, the more I find just naturally, I want to hang out with what I would call soul-infused people. I want to be parts of communities that are interested in all that ice of the iceberg underneath the ocean. And it's not a, you know, a snooty thing like, oh, I don't want to just sit on the top of an iceberg chatting about da-da-da-da. It's just not authentic anymore. And so changes can happen. So on the one hand, we have resistance, homeostasis, keeping us rooted. And on the other hand, we have eros. We have this evolutionary impulse drawing us to this greater fulfillment. And these two are really powerful forces. And this is why it's been helpful for me to have mentors and guides to help, you know, with this. I'm pulled in two directions. I want everything to stay the same because in my case, I have a fairly good life. But on the other hand, I don't want to stop. I want to keep growing, but I'm nervous about that.
We have this, you know, evolutionary impulse. And so how do we start to, you know, what's that like when you're guiding people? You mentioned technologies before, soul encounter technologies, like, and you know, from my own experience, there's an element of like listening, being receptive. So how do you, yeah, what's that like when somebody is starting to go into those territories, or how do you help them go into those territories where they can receive the clarity about this mythopoetic image that you talked about?
Yeah. It's wonderful. There's really endless sort of iterations or creative expressions of soul encounter. Soul encounter is a term that I got from Bill Plotkin. And basically what it means is that you, everyday personality and ego, you, have a conversation, a meeting, an experience where you're popped out of your regular relationship to self, to time and space, and you are sort of stretched into this imaginal dimension of you. And soul that tends, doesn't have to, but it tends to express itself not in a nice linear sort of, you know, expression, but it can. It tends to express itself in images. When I was 20, 21, I was doing a meditation retreat in a little cabin in Northern Ontario in Canada. and I was contemplating my life, and an image came that I identify, I experience as that a kind of a mythopoetic identity. And what it was is an image of a midwife, a whole person midwife. And I knew instantly that it didn't mean the classical midwife, you know, catching babies, which would be a lovely thing, but I knew that wasn't me. And it was the image of not even being a teacher so much as a co-journeyer on their experience of giving birth to their integral self, their whole self. And it was just set. I was just like, I recognized it as the image that defined who I was in the human community. Now, it doesn't say that on my business card because it just sounds woo-woo, California, New Age, tofu and incense. But for me, I know that wherever I am, that's my mission, is to midwife wholeness. That it doesn't matter what I'm hired to do, that's my primary job. And so how do we do that for the soul element? You know, how do we do that? We want to help people to come out of the sort of linear or localized self-sense, right? We have this amazing capacity for discursive thought, and then awareness and discursive thought become, would seem to be inseparable. Now they're not, but without a true investigation through meditation and so forth, we can actually begin to think we are the voice in our head. We're not our voice in the head, but it's just a fraction of who we are. So first, through resting in silence and stillness, allowing, if you have a meditation practice, Zen or Vipassana or Christian or whatever it may be, to the ability to kind of let yourself become quiet can begin to sort of soften the knot of self-sense. And another thing that I think is really helpful is being in wild nature. It's just bar none. Like, you get out of the house and the comfort of the house and the couch and all of that, and you're out in wild nature, and you feel a part of everything. And if you just let yourself soften, you let wild nature do its tidal work on you. Sit outside for a day, you know, or even 4 hours, or even 2 hours. And then you can drop in a question, right? What is the vision of my life? What is my soul's core powers or values? What is my giveaway, the gift I'm meant to give? And then you're listening. You're simply a space, a column of awareness, open and ready to receive something that comes from a mysterious place. You could call it your gut. You could call it your intuition. You could call it your depths. You could call it your innermost. I call it soul. And the next thing to do is, when it comes, is not to poo-poo it. Like, I could have just gone whole person midwife. What's that? And just moved on, you know? But I said, no, wait a minute. What's this? And then to let yourself soak in it. It's not just receiving it. It's like getting a cup of tea with a tea bag in it. You want to let it steep. You want to stay with the image. James Hillman, the famous archetypal psychologist, kept saying over and over again, when it comes to dreams, he said, we don't want to go the route of some psychologists, which is to interpret dreams. Because who's doing the interpretation? Ego. Now, if you have a very smart ego and you've read lots of psychology, you could make a very lovely interpretation. Rather than me interpreting this image of a whole person midwife, rather I could become an apprentice to it. I could steep in it. I could let it perfume and inhabit and change me, rewire me. And so that's the trick. So there's many ways of first getting the image. And in the courses that I do these guided meditations, and they bring us to the threshold of a soul encounter. Listening to an MP3 is not a soul encounter, but listening to an MP3, if you're really allowing it to take you where it's inviting you, can bring you to that threshold. And then it's up to two things: your willingness to be taken and the willingness of soul to take you. And it's, you know, you just don't know on any particular one. So I have all these meditations: the animal guide meditation, the 10 years process, the IntelliKey meditation, the soul cave. But they're all sort of the same thing in a way, which is to deliteralize the experience of self-sense, to let it soften. And then with an image, right, an animal, a blue flame, IntelliKey of you, you can let yourself begin to be magnetized into the shape of your destiny and to back and forth. So it's, I consider it like an apprenticeship. I'm an apprentice. The acorn of me is in apprenticeship to the oak of me, if you will.
I think that's what I really like about this work. I like is an understatement. This sense of being taken again. I've done like purpose work before, but it was very much in this kind of discerned purpose realm. And I was always a little, you know, I guess I'm being a bit unfair, but you know, I end up with a purpose statement or something and that never worked for me, you know. And then, you know, sometimes it would be deeper than that. I would get a kind of visceral sense of something. But with this work, what I loved was like how, yeah, like you actually, it's like screw the statement in a way, although you can get that kind of clarity. It's like what I love was this sense of being taken. And, you know, that's what I've been looking for. Like in all the leadership development I've been doing, it's like, this is what I wanted. And so like, yeah, that sense of allowing these images to emerge, you know, to be receptive and allowing them to emerge, and that they're not fully formed and crystallized, but they, that you need to be in relationship to them. And then they begin to, you know, there's a transformational alchemy, as so to speak, taking place as that's happening. And I certainly find that as I'm doing the guiding too, you know, it's like these sort of symbols, images, senses come in, and then it's just allowing them to be there and to begin to work on the person. You know, like let them do their work on the person, and then they start to feel that sense of being taken. And it's like almost as if like all that effort they were trying to make to try and find themselves, it was like never going to get them where they thought they were going to go. And that this suddenly is the thing where they're like, oh, wow. Yeah, it just didn't work in the way that I was led to believe it works. I wanted to offer that reflection.
Beautiful. Yeah. I love that you use the word taken. You know, we actually want to be taken. And I would even sort of, you know, a little hyperbole and say, we actually want to be abducted from a straitjacket that's too tight. It may have worked, you know, for us as a child, right? In our juvenile years, we want to just sort of learn cultural ways. So we adapt to our culture and to our parents and to our schools and to our society. And that's appropriate and natural till you're maybe 12. But sometime around the teen years, there's the potential, especially if you have soul-rooted parents, which is probably very rare, but it can begin to peak up, is this identity, this sense of, I want to be abducted from my straitjacket. I want to be released and liberated from an identity that's too small. We can feel like we're choking on it. Mm. It just doesn't end. You know, no sooner did I graduate with a master's degree in psychotherapy, and I earned $30,000, and then I thought, well, you know, it was fine, but if I had 10 more thousand, if I could earn 40, then, you know, I don't know, that it would be really good. And so I did. And then I was like, well, yeah, but if I could earn 50. And then, you know, and then I got pretty quickly. I was like, oh, this doesn't end. It's always another 10,000, or it's always another accolade, or it's always another something. And it's a bottomless pit. Like, you can never get enough of what you don't really need. I don't really need a ton of money. I'm not saying that I wouldn't like it, that there aren't some advantages to it, but fame, money, success, it's a soul-shaped hole, and you can't pour enough billions and have enough, you know, starlets or whatever it is. You know, one of those, you see these commercials where it's a guy on a yacht and he's selling you something and he has 10 women in bikinis. And I'm just like, it's not going to do it.
An interesting reflection somebody shared with me the other day was they said they thought one of the, there was an influence, you know, I don't know when this was, but it, like, when science moved into psychology and then you got cognitive science and behavioral science, and they then, this idea of soul, which I think in Jung, you know, and others was there, was thrown out, you know, because it's like, it's not scientific. You can't measure soul. So they created these developmental models, and I'm actually very fond of a lot of those developmental models. But if you look, actually none of them have soul in them, because, you know, they weren't scientifically measuring soul. And I think that's an interesting reflection. And it's a big hole in some of these theories. It's like missing, you know?
Yeah, but it's there. It's really there. There are these developmental theorists like Lovinger, Susan Cook-Reuter, Keegan. And we had at my center, Purpose Guides Institute, we had this woman, Susan Cook-Reuter, Harvard. You know,
I mean, she does some of our programs. I'm a big fan of
she's great.
Yeah, and Keegan too. I mean, we've got a whole developmental coaching program. So love their work. But, you know, Keegan doesn't, you say what you're going to say first.
Yeah. Well, so she told this story when she came to our center that they were sort of creating these tests. They were using sentence stems, how one completes, you know, a sentence. And they had maybe five different sort of categories, you know, development, like a Piaget kind of thing. And what they noticed was in a very small part, it went off the chart, maybe 1%. I'm making that up. I can't remember the exact number. And it was clear that they had integrated everything in the previous stages, but they were out ahead and they didn't have really names for this. So humanity is evolving. Individuals evolve. The species evolves. And what we call mystical is it's normal. You know, we think, oh, it's mystical. It's so da 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 da. Mm. It's a human capacity. We live in a universe that is multidimensional. Yes, there's things we can do with microscopes and so forth. But even that, if you look like deep enough, it gets pretty mystical. But that it is a capacity of a human being. You don't have to be one of the great, you know, Ibn Arabi mystics or something. Just it's a capacity. Well, just in your dream world, you don't usually fly in your regular life unless you're an airplane. But in the dream world, suddenly you have this subtle body that can do things that you can't do in the regular waking world. And I would submit that there is some truth to that here, even in this waking world, that you can have a kind of a bi-unity, if you will, where you're living in this regular space-time with all its laws, but at the same time, it's like you have subtle sight, like a second pair of eyes, mystical eyes. And so you're walking the ground, right, with mystical feet as, what was her name? I just forgot her name. Angeli Zarian. So it's good news. And I think we intuit at some level, even people who are, I'm a materialist, I'm not interested in spirituality, I'm not interested in soul, that's fine. But even they intuit like, yeah, this is a mysterious universe. Like, you know, just the Big Bang from so-called nothing to something. Big Bang number one. Big Bang, I mean, how does that happen? Beyond my pay grade, couldn't tell you. Second Big Bang, from something, materiality, to life. How does that happen? Beyond my pay grade, couldn't tell you. Third Big Bang, you have life, you know, single celled paramecium. And then all of a sudden you have conscious life. And then in the case of humans and perhaps some other animals, but certainly humans, self-aware capacity. Oh my goodness. And what makes us think that it's going to end here? That this is the furthest we can get as a species, or it's the furthest life can get as an expression of its deep intelligence. So you can call it mysticism or spirituality or just mind or just intelligence. And what you are is mostly unused potential. Mm. Mostly that. Mostly that.
And there was a movie called Lucy, which came out a couple of years ago, which I think that, you know, that idea is something that grabs hold of popular culture. You know, when she took some kind of manufactured drug, you know, in this movie that unlocks the full potential of her mind. And that's what the whole movie's about. So she moves from like 5% up to 10 to 20 and 30. And then, you know, and then, you know, it gets pretty wacky. Once she gets up to 100, she like disappears into the, imagine a matrix maybe. But so, you know, I think that's an idea that maybe unconsciously, you know, people are like grabs a hold of them, like that we can unlock our potential. Maybe this is a good time to begin to bring things to a close. Anything you want to leave us as a closing statement? Don't have to. Maybe it's there.
If you don't feel called, it's okay. It's not a, you know, it's follow your own truth, right? There's no teacher on this series or a book on these shelves that knows, you know, the way that you should go. On the other hand, if you feel the calling, right, to swim into the deep end of the pool that is you, then listen to it. It will take courage. Because it's new territory and it can get dark, right? But it's a luminous darkness. It's called the illuminated darkness in the literature, right? And the Imagine a Matrix is stunningly beautiful. If you think this world is beautiful, know this. It is an analog to a world with even more depth, light, intelligence, and creativity. So if you are called, follow it. It's a perfume. Follow it to books, follow it to teachers, but most of all, go out into wild nature and listen, you know, drop in a question. It's that simple. Having a guide can be really important, but it comes down to this. Go out onto the land and ask a really hard, poignant, deep question. What am I called to next? What is my mythopoetic identity? And listen, don't do it just once. Do it 2 times, 3 times, 10 times, 100 times. And it will reveal itself. Your interest, your passion, your lament, your cry, your ache to live from your wholeness will do some of the work for you. It's like your prayer itself is the answer. So that would be an offering.
A pretty amazing answer. Yeah, nice closing statement. And just tell us in very quickly, like, where can we can find out more about your work?
Yeah, it's a Purpose Guides Institute. So just type that in, or you can type Jonathan Gustin. Every September we have a group of people. I always say that real purpose discovery tends to be a community experience, because it really helps to have people who are on the path with you, to have soul-rooted community. So every September we start again. And then for those who feel called to, they can become purpose guides and do the work that I do and you do. And it's a lot of fun. And we have amazing guest teachers. I'm very, very pleased. Parker Palmer and Adya Shanti and Joanna Macy and Michael Mead and Thomas Moore. And it goes on and on. We're really lucky.
Beautiful. Thanks very much for today, for sharing yourself so generously.
Yeah, it was really fun. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it.
And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training, The Power of Embodied Transformation. This program will teach you how to connect to the deep wisdom that lives in the body so you can create lasting change with your clients. Head to coachesrising.com/power of embodied transformation to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by the 22nd of May.